Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbroadcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates.
Welcome to Listen Now, the podcast where we go through the most important and rockin'est albums of all time. This season, we're focusing on albums from the 1980s. I'm your host, Matt Stewart, and with me, as always, is my co-host, Sam Tonkin. Welcome, Sam.
Hello, Matt. Oh, that actually hurt.
I was almost out of breath, so I had to go with a change of voice.
And we're back up here. Welcome everybody.
Oh, so good. Hey, this week we're talking about Midnight Oil's Diesel and Dust. It's their sixth album.
Sixth!
And, I didn't realize how many banging hit albums they had.
Yeah.
It's amazing that this is their sixth album.
I didn't realize it was so late.
Hits the whole way through. Yep. Yeah, amazing. Much like Cold Chisel, I know a lot of their songs, but I just didn't know where all of them fit in.
Yep. Very much the same for me for the Oils this time around.
What was your experience growing up with the Oils?
Well, you already know my history with Triple M and Oils.
Triple M history.
Rock radio, yeah. Triple M.
Why do they whisper it?
I don't know. It's a mystery. Never knew. Anyway.
Well, it's because the music rocks so hard.
Yeah.
You know, they got to whisper the
Don't
want to
spoil.
Yeah.
Spoil. Listening to Triple M throughout childhood and the Oils, along with my boys Cold Chisel, were always huge features on it. So a lot of their hit songs I already knew because of the radio and then my later love for Australian pub rock. Delving into the albums themselves, I've never done before. So I'm pretty excited to do this album.
Yeah, I think it's probably a bunch of our listeners were around and into these guys at the time. But, this album came out before you were born. You were born into the early 90s. I was born in the mid-80s. So this season's so much fun going back and, I know the hits from later.
Mm.
But I wasn't around to hear the albums.
Yeah, when they were.
If you know what I mean?
Yes.
So it's been really fun going back and hearing the albums in full. I think my experience with them was much like yours, they were everywhere.
Yeah.
I mean, they played at the Sydney Olympics closing ceremony.
Oh, yeah.
But I already knew them very well by then.
Yeah.
They were already like veteran rock heroes by then.
Plus, I think by the time I was really aware of them, Peter Garrett was in politics.
Oh, right.
So that was, quite a lot later.
Yeah. Well, I think I was into them even before then. I got to see them live once just before they broke up, or at least went on hiatus, which is pretty cool. So I got free tickets to this Triple M festival called M1. And they were the headliners of it. It was
That's awesome.
Festival of Rock, Sport and Comedy. Our footy club, the Saints, had a giveaway. They just said, come down to the club if you want tickets.
That's amazing.
So I went down and just got a double pass because it did not sell. I think it was a huge financial failure, this festival.
Bummer.
Not because of the Oils. I think I don't know why, but it was just one of those. There was this time where there was all these festivals that organically grew to be huge behemoths, like the Big Day Out and stuff like that.
Yep.
And then I think a few people thought they could just start it huge.
Oh.
So that's what Triple M just tried to start a huge festival from the beginning. It was at the Docklands Stadium.
Oh, God, really?
Yeah.
That's large.
It was weird. Yeah, it was a weird vibe. But their set was awesome.
It would have been mad.
Much like a lot of these bands, I think this is the second of three bands so far where I mainly know them from the Greatest Hits album. I remember listening to, there was some Triple M top 500 rock song countdown or something while I was studying for my year 12 exams.
Oh, that would have been awesome.
And there was all these Midnight Oil songs that I didn't know so well, mm-hmm. like not just the big hits that they play all the time. And so I went out and bought the 20,000 watt RSL greatest hits
soon after
that and absolutely flogged it. Amazing. It so hard. But that, I mean, because of the way that album's put together, it's not chronological like some greatest hits are.
Yeah, okay.
So it's all muddled up and it further confused me where the songs came from. And then I bought, after that, I bought the only new album that came out while I was, you know, just starting to become a fan, which is still the last album they've put out, which was bloody called Capricornia. Came out in 2002. And I haven't released an album since then. And I really like that album a lot. That had just come out when I saw them. Maybe it was the, it was around that time that the M1 Festival was, I think. So they, I remember them playing a few songs off that were really good.
I think I've got Head Injuries at home on vinyl.
Wow. That's
on vinyl.
That's meant to be an absolute classic. I haven't heard it, but that is, I know hardcore fans say that is, it's a bit harder and edgier and stuff. So I really want to do a series of Listen Now focusing on the albums of Midnight Oil, like we did season one about Chisel.
I have absolutely no issues with that.
Awesome.
At all.
I think really think we should do that at some point. That'd be great.
Keen, lock it in, Eddie.
Awesome. So yeah, so I know overall, I know sort of the mainstream. I'm maybe a slightly bigger fan than the average person, but I'm not a hardcore fan by any means. But I feel like I very much could be.
I feel like we will be once we do the season of them.
Awesome.
Imagine, and then they came out for tour and then we could go see them as well.
Well, you know what? They were planning it. They were planning new releases, which might still be happening this year and a tour. And I'm like, oh, that would work out so perfectly. But if, who knows if live music, how long until we're allowed to go see it again?
Fucking true.
But yeah, hopefully. I should say before you get into their biography, if people want to know what next week's album is, Sam, you're saying you asked on social media if anyone did, and it was a mix. So we're going to, we'll let you know, but we'll let you know right at the end. So listen past the outro track if you want to hear what next week's
album
is. If
you want spoilers.
Yeah.
That's for all you preppers.
Yeah, which I'm one of you. I like to, well, I mean, that's what this podcast's all about. I would have played this album 20 times in the last week, I reckon, minimum.
Yep. Got to get into it though. Fuck, it's not hard though. It's so good.
It's so good. Spoilers. This album's spoilers. Very good.
Spoilers. We both rate this highly.
Okay, well, let us know. What have you found out researching their bio?
So they began in Sydney in 1971 with the, I think it was the drummer and the maybe original bassist and a couple others. Right. And they were called Farm. Just to add to our list of shit band names that we've had through the seasons.
So Chisel was... Were they Feather? No, they were Orange.
Some of them were, they were called Orange. Oh, and some of them came Feather or was Feather the one that had Bon Scott as a singer and Jimmy Barnes and then they both fucked it up?
We've learned too much stuff and it's already been pushed out of our brains.
It's like a sponge. You squeeze it all in and then it's just gone.
Huey Lewis and the News were, what were they? They were called, he came from a band called Clover.
That's right, Hughie.
And then they were called... Huey Lewis and American Express.
Oh, and then they had to change it for the old banking thing.
Anyway, we're not here to talk about Huey. He keeps getting into our conversations. I've become obsessed with Huey.
We need a Huey clip like we've got Jimmy coming over the mountains.
that's right.
Huey's coming through the door.
I'm afraid you're just too darn loud.
So they put out a little advert for an extra member to which Peter Garrett responded and became their singer and... I think he was a keyboardist or something.
Yeah, right.
Synthesizerist.
Do you know around when that was?
71, 72.
He joined it so that, wow.
Yeah. But they were still called Farm then, and they were a, quote, part-time band because Garrett was still studying in Sydney doing his law degree.
Right.
Which is hectic, I reckon. But they eventually changed their name in 76, drawing their name out of a hat. And leaving behind some more cracking names, Television, Sparta, and Southern Cross.
Television is definitely, there's a band called Television. I imagine all three of those have probably been picked up by others.
Really?
I would say
Television.
So. Television.
Get on Television.
The drug of a nation.
So they originally started doing a bunch of like Led Zeppelin-y type covers, but Peter Garrett brought in some more contemporary rock for the or more less trippy rock, I suppose I would think of it.
Right.
Eventually, they're touring up and down mostly the East Coast, similar to where Cold Chisel was.
Very similar to Chisel,
right? Playing all the surf clubs up and down the East Coast in New South Wales, pretty much. Yeah, mostly Sydney.
Their early music was very surfy.
Yeah.
Oh, it's interesting. So the places they were playing influenced their sound, or vice versa, I guess.
Bit of both, I think.
And similar to that's what happened to Chisel, really. Yeah. They were playing the regional cities, and that
bit
influenced
harder.
Their sound. And they were also playing stuff like Led Zeppelin covers and hard rock covers.
Yeah, seems to be the place to be.
And they started up within a couple of years of each other as well.
Yeah. Also, Midnight Oil came from the Jimi Hendrix song Burning of the Midnight Lamp.
Ah.
Fun fact. They eventually released a self-titled debut album in 78 and gained...
Same as Cold Chisel.
And same as Chisel, gained a cult following in their homeland despite a lack of mainstream media acceptance. So they pretty much were not at great odds with the mainstream media, mainstream music. And were very much given a dismissive response from mainstream rock.
Interesting.
They were consistently championed by Sydney rock stations Double J and its FM band successor Triple J, but otherwise was pretty much ignored by Australia's mainstream commercial radio stations in their early career. And their manager, I think his name was like Richard Morris or something, developed a reputation as one of the toughest managers and became notorious for banning critics and journalists who were usually given free admission to concerts but were banned if they wrote unfavorable reviews. One of the most notable in mid-1980 was writer and critic Bruce Elder wrote Midnight Oil as narrow and xenophobic and declared they were a kind of antipodean pub rock version of Queen, life-denying, sexist, secular, and bigoted, with endless touting of Australia and all things Australian.
Wow. That's not how I think of them at all.
No, that's the literal opposite. But Morris banned old mate Bruce from all Oil shows, and then Elder later recanted, describing them as the only Australian band to have developed a truly Australian sound. Fuck you, Bruce.
I mean, that's not true. The only Australian band...
It's very narrow to say that. I thought
Loves a big call. This guy,
it really loves it. So their frostiness of Midnight Oil's relationship with traditional media, music media, kind of helped the band develop this like street cred and a reputation for making no compromises within the music industry, including in the early 80s. They were meant to appear on good old digga 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 Countdown. And apparently Countdown requires artists to mime their songs during their quote unquote live performances. But Midnight Oil and Morris insisted that they perform completely live, and have their own sound engineering, supervising. They wouldn't back down on that. Countdown wouldn't back down on that. And then apparently they arrived late for rehearsal, and due to the show's very tight schedule and budget, there was a strict policy that latecomers were then not allowed to appear. So in response, the group declared that they would never appear on the show, which they, I promise, they faithfully kept.
Wow.
And then for its final show in 1987, Molly Meldrum shaved his head bald, imitating Garrett, and expressed regret that Midnight Oil never appeared on the show, which was pretty hardcore, I thought.
What year was that?
89, sorry.
89, yeah, right. Well, they'd been the biggest band in Australia through the mid to late 80s, I guess.
Yeah.
Or must have been one of them.
The album before Diesel,
they were building already, but
yeah.
once Chisel broke up, especially or around that time.
Yeah. It seems they very much were running parallel lines with each other, those two bands, I think.
And then once Chisel parted, their next three albums, The Oils, went to number one.
Yeah. So speaking of 1982, they released 10987654321, which included singles Power and the Passion and Read About It. The album peaked at number three, which was pretty cool, and their denunciation of American military interference in foreign affairs and U.S. forces, and their critique of imperialist repression in short memory was all included. And the album remained on the chart, the Australian charts, for 171 weeks. So it's pretty big, and then comes Diesel and Dust.
Read about such a banger. I mean, so that album went 7 times platinum in Australia.
Yep.
7 times.
Heck, like it stayed on the charts for 171 weeks.
Read About
It's
one of my favourite tunes of theirs. But that had, yeah, that was like a mini greatest hits. That had 4 tracks that were on, at least four, I think. Short Memory, Read About It, US Forces, Power and the Passion. They're all songs that I know.
Yep.
Like the back of my hand, and I've never heard that album before.
Yeah, like it's, I think that album would be cool to do. That's, again, another reason for us to do a season of Midnight Oil. So after that absolute cracker of an album, they released Diesel and Dust in 1985, I think it was.
87.
87.
So in between Red Sails and the Sunset was released.
Oh, yeah. There was...
In 84, that went to number one, their first number one in Australia. And what was on that?
That one, a lot of their earlier albums, I must admit, I didn't recognize anything on the first three, I think.
Oh, right. I know a few not the first album. I don't think I know any of the tracks, but the second one, and that's probably in part because I've got the greatest hits.
Yeah.
But off Red Sails, it's got When the Generals Talk.
Yes, that's a great one, actually.
Which I'm pretty sure is one of the tracks with, it sounds like a different band almost, that one.
Yeah. That's well, he's singing in a higher octave.
Well, I think that's Hurst, the drummer, singing.
Is he singing?
I think so.
What
he sings a few, he sings another track on that album, which is my favorite song of theirs, Kosciuszko.
Yes, that's a great song.
That's also Hurst, I'm pretty
what
sure.
What else is on that album?
Best of Both Worlds, that one you probably know.
Where's like King of the Mountain sit? That might be my favorite Oil song.
Is that?
But I think that's a lot later.
Well, I don't know
if it's later.
It's not a lot later. It's off the album after Diesel and Dust.
Oh, there
it's
you
off
go.
Blue Sky Mining from 1990.
Oh, yeah, God, that would
another
be
another number
cracking.
One album. So there's just...
They got a string. They got a pretty strong string here.
They've done all right. They've done all right, the fellas.
Done bloody fucking all right. But back to Diesel and Dust. So it went number one on the Australian album charts for 6 weeks. It went number 21 on the Billboard 200s in 88, number 19 on the UK album charts. Beds Are Burning was their biggest international hit single, peaking at number 6 and number 17, number 6 in Australia, 17 in the Billboard Hot 100, 6 on the UK singles. And then the rest of their albums landed pretty high as well in the top 20s. And then I just found a couple of cool facts about the album itself. So their album was a concept album designed around the struggles of Indigenous Australians and environmental issues, which is two narratives that the band really focused on in a lot in their songwriting. It was the last album that Peter Gifford, the bassist, contributed to. And his bass on Beds Are Burning is just top bloody notch.
Chugga, 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 chugga.
Yes, it is.
We'll hear that soon.
They requested that all royalties for The Dead Heart, the single, be directed towards Indigenous communities. It reached top 4 in Australia. It reached 4 in Australia and cracked the Hot 100 in both US and UK. This one I found super, super interesting. The album cover for Diesel and Dust features the Burra Homestead, located in South Australia, and was shot by Australia's most acclaimed landscape photographer, Ken Duncan. And if you don't know who Ken Duncan is, it's very, very likely that you've seen his pictures in hotels, in motels, in any public building pretty much, because he takes absolutely fantastic shots and they just absolutely fucking everywhere.
Yeah, right.
So that's pretty – I thought that was really, really cool.
It's a great photo, great cover.
Yeah,
they do
so
great
good.
Album covers.
They do. They've been nominated and won a few album cover art awards too. And the last fun fact that I saw, which I think is going to lead into your review, is in 1989, Rolling Stone ranked Diesel and Dust as the number 13th best album of the 80s, which was a fair accomplishment considering how widely respected Rolling Stone is.
Yeah. Yeah. Pretty much.
I say that pretty fair.
Yeah. I think, I mean, yeah, depending on who you talk to, probably.
Yeah. I mean, but, yeah.
It's obviously, it's one of the biggest rock publications in the world, though, that's for sure. So in Australia, it as well went 7 times platinum, 3 times platinum in Canada, 2 times platinum in Switzerland.
Switzerland?
It went platinum in the United States and gold in Sweden and the UK.
Wow.
So it really did break around the world. There's a video that I haven't seen for a while, but it's I think it's them playing in New York City or something like that.
Oh, out the front of the Exxon building?
Yes, that's right. Yep. And they stopped traffic. I'm like, and I, by the time I got into them, I just thought, much like Cold Chisel, they never really broke in America. But so seeing that, I was like, holy shit, they were actually a big deal.
They did good.
For a little while. I think maybe some Americans would see or think of them as like a one-hit wonder.
Yeah.
Americans who are old enough to remember, that is. So, yeah, that's interesting because here they're legends and icons, but with so many hits. But, interesting that they did break through really around the world, which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
All right, well, let me read this article that is attached to their 13th placing. It says Midnight Oil, Diesel and Dust. 13th, so it came in... one behind Public Enemies, It Takes a Nation of Millions to Hold Us Back, which is such an iconic album. And Elvis Costello and the Attractions come in at number 11 as well. I think a few albums that I think might be coming up in this top 20 will be on there as well. So when that happens, I'll definitely read out the
reviews.
Anyway, so
good one.
Says, the next time you hear some rock star moaning about life on the road, think of this album and the remarkable tour that inspired it. In the summer of 1986, which is actually winter down under, the Australian rockers and political activists of Midnight Oil packed amplifiers, sleeping bags and good intentions into a caravan of four-wheel drives and embarked on a concert tour of remote Aboriginal settlements in the Northern Territory. Hey, do you know that? It's actually winter down under.
Hey.
Summertime is wintertime.
That's so weird how it's backwards.
It's upside down down there.
It is. We are upside down, aren't we? Are we not on the roof?
We're putting down under on top. I was in some ad for Aussie Burgers or something.
Oi, Prime Minister.
The members of the band ate grubs and wallaby meat and played on makeshift stages under chilly night skies for audiences huddled around campfires. They also witnessed firsthand the extreme poverty, cultural devastation, and spiritual resilience of the island continent's original settlers. The Oils 60... it's funny, I don't think of Indigenous Australians as settlers because they've been here for 60,000 plus years.
I think there's evidence now of over 100.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So calling them settlers, yeah, it's weird to refer as...
I mean, when this was written, I guess the evidence wouldn't have gone so far back, but still.
Well, only 20 years prior to that review, they were not considered people, weren't they? That was 67 was the referendum.
Yes. In Australia, listen to flora and fauna. We've got a fucked history here.
Yes, we do.
Which goes on. And so does the article. They also witnessed firsthand the extreme poverty, cultural devastation and spiritual resistance. I've just read that fucking line. I'll take that out. The Oils' awe and anger came pouring out in Diesel and Dust, an album caked with outback grit and charged with hard rock moxie and melodic savvy. Contrasting images of Aboriginal desperation and determination with the ruins of white manifest destiny, Diesel and Dust is a site-specific document rooted in the basic theme of a man's inhumanity to man. The Oils' odyssey had started a couple of years earlier, when the request of a teacher friend, they played to 300 Aborigines at a settlement near Darwin. It made a greater impact on us than playing in New York or to audiences of 30,000 people anywhere, lead singer Peter Garrett told an Australian reporter in 1986. The more we toured overseas, the more the desire grew to get out with the Aborigines and learn more about our own country. Shortly before the tour, Midnight Oil was commissioned to write a song for a documentary about the return of a sacred tribal site, Ayers Rock, or Uluru.
God, I haven't heard it be called Ayers Rock for the Aboriginal name. A long time.
I'm reading the article. I mean, we don't say Ayers Rock anymore.
When was this written again? 89, wasn't 89. It? November 89.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think I knew it only as Ayers Rock growing up.
I think Uluru
from the 90s.
Yeah, because I very vaguely recall it being referred to as Ayers Rock in early primary school, which was smack bang mid-90s.
And that's, you don't really hear that anymore. The band delivered The Dead Heart, a song of ghostly urgency that was a number one hit down under and subsequently became the centerpiece of Diesel and Dust. Also written at the same time was Beds Are Burning, another powerful song about Ayers Rock, Uluru. Appropriately, the band played both songs for its Aboriginal audiences. At one settlement, Kintore, the village elders responded to the Oil's sincerity by allowing them to participate in a sacred tribal ceremony. Oh, yeah. Upon returning to their Sydney home base, the Oil's wrote the rest of Diesel and Dust and undertook a tour of sweaty local pubs to road test the material before recording it with British producer Warren Livesey. The resulting album gave the band its first gold album in America, which now is platinum apparently, as well as a top 20 single, Beds Are Burning. It also fulfilled Midnight Oil's long-standing desire, in drummer Rob Hurst's words, to write Australian music that people overseas could get into and understand, which would enlarge their whole vision of Australia past Vegemite sandwiches and kangaroo hops.
Good for them.
Yeah. I wonder if it... Yeah, I wonder if that had much of a lasting impact.
Hmm.
I wonder... Yeah, because it still feels like there's a bit of that, the... international idea of Australia is g'day mate, Vegemite.
Yeah, knifey spoony before. is that the end of that article?
That's the end of that article,
so,
yes.
Because I also read that and then found some other comments about it. So there were concerns initially about Midnight Oil's to express attempts to express Indigenous issues to white urban audiences, namely with the question, who holds the power to tell whose history? With like The Dead Heart, for example, the lyrics tell of the story of colonialization from an Indigenous point of view, but some critics felt they reinforced the primitive stereotype. And The Dead Heart, as you mentioned earlier, had been written in response to a request by the organizers of the 1985 ceremony to return control of Uluru back to its Indigenous caretakers, so to the mob of that area. Whose name I can't remember off the top of my head right now. And Midnight Oil had originally resisted in releasing it, arguing that it would be more appropriate for an Indigenous band to release a single. But the organisers insisted, arguing that the band would reach a wider audience within the predominantly Caucasian urban centres. And that's why Midnight Oil ended up wanting the all proceeds from the Dead Heart single to go to back to those organisers, I believe. And then on top of all of that, they had two Indigenous groups, Warumpi Band and Gondwanaland, tour with them for that album, I believe.
Yeah, was that the Blackfella, Whitefella tour?
Yeah.
Yes.
I think this is the most political episode we've had. Not that we're arguing about anything, but it's certainly the most politically driven band album. And album for sure.
Yeah, sports was not a very... political album from Huey. Although there is one track about a return Vietnam vet.
Oh, true, of course.
But yeah, this is definitely more, well, not more. This is, you know, it is just
political.
This is political and
full stop.
Yeah, I mean, there's some Don Walker and some of his Cold Chisel songs are political in their way.
Mm. Well, Kay San was a Vietnam vet's return story, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think there are, yeah, I mean, there's plenty of, political
underlines.
Yeah,
I always think of Cold Chisel more of Don's writing, especially as like more of a social commentary.
Yeah, which I think you know it depends. I mean, political's got such a broad definition, so it just depends on you know. There's the overtly political stuff that Midnight Oil gets more into.
Yeah.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Anyhow, do you want to go through some of these tracks?
Abso-fucking-lutely.
Speaking of Cold Chisel, I think the opening track of this is probably... What do you think of when you think of their big song, their iconic song, Oils?
I think the absolute cum thumper, Beds Burning.
Yeah, I think to me, so Cold Chisel's song that most will first think of is K-San. And yep. I think Beds Are Burning is their sort of K-San. Power and the Passion's probably...
That's a good one.
The other one that I think of. But anyway, that's what kicks off this album, Beds Are Burning, with that chugging bass line we were talking about before. What a way to kick off an album. Is that real horns or synthy horns?
Why? It's a proper chug.
That's a big start to the album.
I don't know if there's been a bigger album opener.
Yeah, right. Wow.
Than this. Big call.
Because it's not a... It's more of a groove than just a straight out fast rock. A bit of some sort of faux cowbell there.
Yep. Love that. You know how I feel about cowbell.
Oh, yeah. Love.
I've got a fever.
Yeah. More cowbell, please.
Also, thank you for all of the lovely comments saying... Please keep singing. I got self-conscious about it last episode or the one before. But everyone supports it, so you are welcome. You'll get more of it.
Give it back.
Bow, bow, bow.
All right. So this is a track that they played at the Sydney Olympics. And they were decked out with sorry written all over them.
Which is, oh my goodness, that's...
Because at that time, Australia still hadn't officially apologised.
No, that wasn't until 2008, which was when I was in year 12 and we got sat down to watch it.
So that's the opening track. The next one is Put Down That Weapon. It's another one So the first three tracks in this album I was very familiar with before listening to it.
This one I think I'd heard before. But I couldn't remember if it was... If I knew it or not.
I think a lot of these songs have got a... I mean, it does sound somewhat 80s. I think it's mainly maybe in the drum sound, but it's kind of... It feels pretty timeless as well.
Yeah,
I know
I just
contradicted myself there, but... I mean, the fact that I would have guessed this was... Well, it doesn't sound super 80s, doesn't seem super 90s.
No.
It doesn't sound super anything.
No, it just sounds like... Midnight Oil.
The next one I would call probably the biggest cum thumper on the album.
I knew this song, didn't know what the song was called, so when I looked at the track for the first time I was like, I don't know what this is, and then it started and whoo.
And the song Dream World.
It's about the... This is a cracking song.
That's...
See, this sounds more 80s to me than...
Right.
But still cracker. It was written in response to the Queensland
Joe Bjelke-Petersen,
thank you, state government that basically was just pulling down a whole bunch of everything make way for townhouses.
That I've been to that pub that he mentioned this up, the Breakfast Creek Hotel.
Oh, have you?
Yeah.
Cool. There's also one about Cloudland Dance Hall.
Oh, I've been to Cloudland as well.
Ah, it looks like a big...
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wonder if... Oh, interesting. I didn't realise it went back that far.
Apparently it got torn down or was threatened to be torn down. It was demolished and they didn't even take out any of the decorations and ship them inside. They pretty much just drove the bulldozer straight through it.
Love this song. Love Brisbane. Brisbane's, I don't know what it was like back then, but these days it's a sick city. The next couple I did not know at all. I kind of pair these up, but to me it feels like...
They go in pairs?
They go together.
So I totally feel
you. I imagine this first one, Arctic World, track 4, is probably your least favourite on the album. It's the slowest.
It's real slow.
I feel like the first three just goes bang, 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 and then this takes it right down a notch to start building up tension again.
Yeah, well, yeah, because there are some bangers coming up. But this song is about mining and oil drilling in Greenland and Alaska.
Okay.
And was meant to bring attention to the harmful effects that these activities have on the environment. Peter Garrett did climate change before it was cool.
Cool.
Not anymore.
So it goes along basically that pace. The slight build.
Yeah.
And then it clicks over into Warakuna, which it does feel like this is the two pair up very nicely as songs. I don't know, thematically, I'm not sure, but do you know what this one's about?
Yes, I do. So back in the day, some old mate, classic old mate, called Lassiter.
Oh, yeah, Lassiter's gold.
Yes, that exact
I did an episode
bloke.
Of Do Go On about it.
Oh, did ya?
Yeah.
Sick, I'll listen to that later.
So this song's about that?
Yeah, so it's basically got the idea that his elusive gold reef in the desert became legendary, but he died from a failed expedition, right?
Yeah.
And this song is about how, hypothetically, if he was right, Lassiter posed a threat in terms of more whites, more disease, alcohol, more pressure for indigenous people to get off their land because of how valuable the ground would be to white people. I don't know what the exact line is.
This
not since
is
Lassiter
no
was
Buckingham
here.
Palace.
Yeah. Not since Lassiter was here, black men's got a lot to fear. And that was what that reference is. Harold. Gotcha. Obey it, Harold.
And then it builds. There you go. Yeah, it builds. So those two together, it's just like a slow build up to.
It does.
Pretty nice crescendo.
Yep.
And then the next track is maybe, it's got to be one of the all-time bangers.
I reckon.
The Dead Heart. So so this is the one you're talking about that was released prior to the album coming out. It was written and released maybe even prior to the album coming out.
Yep.
And it is sort of that slightly uncomfortable thing of it being sung first person from the perspective of Indigenous Australians, from a white band singer. But from what you say...
It was encouraged, but the people that he kind of wrote it for encouraged who were Indigenous mob encouraged them to release it because it would spread
make a
the word.
Splash.
Yeah, yeah. I also find it ironic that a lot of right wingers who, similarly to Cold Chisel, right wingers who think of it as real pub rock, hard rock, Australiana kind of stuff, but this music and this song especially is very much about. How white man has destroyed Australia and in the Indigenous communities,
right.
But they'll proudly sing it.
Yeah, well, I mean, there are being right wing doesn't I don't think necessarily rules out the fact that they might believe in Indigenous rights.
That's a good point.
But sometimes it is more ironic. Oh, there's John Howard who was really dragged his feet on that side of things when Garrett was getting into politics. Someone asked him what his favourite Midnight Oil song was, and he said, Beds Are Burning, not realising, let's give it back, let's give
yeah,
all
literally,
the
let's
land
give
back.
It back.
Time to pay the rent.
Oh,
but,
Lordy.
Yeah, so that I remember that getting a bit of attention. Anyway, so this next one, track 6.
Very importante.
The Dead Heart, absolute banger. Friends of Rom covered this.
Did
years
they?
Later. Yeah.
Did they do a good cover?
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty faithful, sped up a little bit, slightly pop-punkified.
Love it.
It's one of the great sing-alongs without lyrics.
Oh, yeah. Love a good do-do-do.
That's a real 80s clap.
That is.
Sound.
I wonder if that references White Man Listens to the Songs We Sing. There's a lot of... a lot of our main roads were taken from Indigenous songlines, which is the way that different mobs would travel around Australia without physical maps, was by song. which were called song lines, that would direct them, and a lot of times led to water. And, you know, if they were making a long trip, it was to safe spaces to eat, safe spaces to, you know, rest, places where there was reliable water. And please correct me if I'm disrespecting this in any way, but this is from what I've learned through the years. So I do wonder if that's a reference to that.
Yeah, interesting. It's just a fucking banging rock song.
It is. I love that. Is it acoustic guitar up the top?
Yeah. So they got two guitarists.
Yeah.
Two lead guitarists, or two, sorry, two guitarists and a bass player. So it gives them a more dense sound than a lot of other bands at that time.
Yeah, they'd have. Okay.
And apparently all very good, accomplished musicians as well.
Love that.
That drum's very 80s.
Yeah. The real, like, doo doo. Is that the tom tom? The floor tom.
In company's
Uranium
company's company's I mean, we can't play the whole thing, but so then the next one goes on to Whoa. This is another. Whoa. This is probably another one that you don't love, being a slower one.
That would be correct.
Resetting the pace a bit. I like this song. I think it's a pretty song.
I also couldn't find any information as to what it was about. The Lord is my temple. God is by my side. You pay rates on that temple. Build materials at the side. He gives reason. Yeah, I'll skip ahead of this.
But it's pretty consistently at that kind of level. And then you've got the next one's a real top-down highway rocker, I reckon.
Yeah.
Aurora.
And there was a little bit of critical criticism.
Oh, yeah?
About the term bullroarer being used. And a bullroarer, which I've found the description from the Kalengu Aboriginal Arts Centre, which was a really cool website if anyone wants to check it out. But a bullroarer is a musical communication and warning device which is made of a thin wooden panel with a string to hold it, and have been used in initiation ceremonies and in burials for different meanings. So it was a bit criticised that it was using a ceremonial and sacred item in a rock song.
Right. Oh, interesting. Yeah. I certainly didn't even. More good na na na's.
Yep.
But I didn't. I did not connect that in my head.
I only knew it because I looked it up, what the meaning of the song was.
Yeah, right. Oh, that's great. In my head, I was thinking it was some sort of a truck or something.
That's exactly what I thought. Just some big beast truck that roars like a bull. That was going real literal with it.
So track 9 is Sell My Soul. Which some would say Garrett did when he joined the Labor Party. Politics.
So the guitarist and keyboardist Jim said this song was about Australia's somewhat uneasy alliance with the US.
Right.
Also, apparently we used to be part of the EU. Is that correct?
Don't think so.
We used to be part of the EU but got kicked out when the walls went up there. What does that mean?
The European Union.
That's what it says. I'll look into that further.
Jeez, you're coming at us with some big facts. How about you double check them first?
That'd be what a smart person would do, Matt. We're not here for that.
You sure you're not thinking of Eurovision? We've been in that.
We have been in that. Should we be part of that? That's political. Should TISM have represented us? Absolutely. Absolutely. That's not political. That's just fact. Could you imagine they get up and do something like defecate on my face? Coming up is Australia's TISM.
That would have been real good. And then it finishes with Sometimes, which is another top-down rocker. This is a real pump-up tune as well, I reckon.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you ever hit the wall, you just got to keep going.
Just got to keep bloody going.
To me, this feels like this is one of those songs that's like, should have been a hit. I don't think it was ever released as a single, but it feels like it.
Yeah. This is kind of the one that could have gone a little bit more mainstream, I think, just because the music's a bit fluffier without being fluffy.
Yeah.
Because I definitely wouldn't call it fluffy. But that intro especially was very much...
It's a very singable chorus.
Also, how fun is it singing Peter Garrett style? It's like singing Tom DeLonge where you can't help but be like... And always... Weird.
And I think he's been compared to Blink-182 too much.
I would hope not. Sometimes. Sometimes.
And then there is a version of the album that released with a bonus track. I don't know when it came to be added to the album, but worth playing a little bit of because I think it's another cracking tune. It's called Gun Barrel Highway.
Highway.
It's another sort of
see this got a little
radio friendly.
It's a little
song.
Chisel to me.
Love that bouncy riff.
Mm-hmm. I'll give you something to ride home about. I love that. I'll give you something to ride home about.
So this album ended up selling about 500,000 copies in Australia.
Not bad.
And at that time, 1987, Australia's population was 16 million. So one in every 32 people.
Yes.
So you imagine like how many households that'd be, you know, so families of, you know, families were bigger in the 80s. So families of five or six, then, you know, that's like... That's in every two. What are, I don't know. I'm not a mathematician, but
we've
that's
discussed
like
before,
one in
maths is not our
three or four households would have
much.
Had a copy of it.
I love that.
So it was
popular.
A ubiquitous.
Nice.
Well, I don't know, I think I quite nailed the landing on that word, but
I don't know what it means, so it's okay.
Ubiquitous everywhere.
Oh, yep. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
Sort of album. So yeah. What are your highlight tracks? I mean, we kind of mentioned the way through. So going in, the songs that we knew like the back of our hands, I imagine both of us, Beds Are Burning, Dream
mm-hmm.
World,
mm-hmm.
The Dead Heart.
Mm-hmm.
I also knew Put Down That Weapon very well. They're the four I knew. I didn't know any of the other songs. I still love all four of those.
Yep.
Dead Heart is an all-time classic.
Yes.
I think Dream World is maybe the one that stands out to me the most going in, but Beds
yep.
Are Burning, much like K-San.
Yes.
I kind of revisited listening to it again. It's just one of those songs I've heard
a million times.
So I'd never seek it out.
Yep.
But listening to it again.
And in context of the whole
fresh
album.
Fresh ears.
Yep.
I think it's just, it's a cracker.
Fucking cum thumper.
Yeah. That bass riff is sick.
Oh, yeah.
But then the new ones to me that I really enjoyed, probably especially Sometimes,
mm-hmm.
I'd say. But yeah, there's a bunch of them that just have that sort of driving sound.
Yeah,
Sometimes, which, Bull Roarer, love, Gun Barrel Highway, The Dead Heart, Dream World, Beds Are Burning. They're all songs that
just
play.
Just the album.
Flying
it's just the
down,
album.
Down a highway.
Warakerna, I really enjoyed, apart from the ones that you'd already mentioned, and Bull Roarer were probably my two like favorite new pickups.
Yeah.
And Sometimes has just been stuck. Just sometimes.
Stuck in the head.
Yeah.
Well, probably, I think someone requested on Twitter, I can't remember who, but one of our great listeners suggested we maybe start a playlist of picking out the 80-est songs on each album as we go through and make a playlist of, maybe we'll make one with our faves and one with the 80-est sounding ones. I don't know what the 80-est sounding ones on this. You reckon Dreamworld was one of the more 80s sounding tunes in this?
I think so.
I think that'll be on both playlists for me then.
I also agree,
Sweet. So that's something we'll do. And if I get around to doing it before this episode comes out, there'll be a link to it in the show notes. Get on board. And on that, on our account, our Listen Now Spotify account, we've also got a bunch of Cold Chisel playlists there if you're keen on them.
Now, before we get to our rating of 80... Rate 80? There's something to work with there. I just want to read out a list of bands who have been quoted as being influenced by Midnight Oil.
Okay.
Green Day, REM, Pearl Jam, Garbage, The Cranberries, Biffy Clyro, Crowded House, Powderfinger, Living End, John Butler, DMAs, Tim Friedman, amongst others. And then you've got quotes from like Michael Stipe from REM. Peter Garrett is a brilliant songwriter who's able to put himself into and write about any situation. Neil Finn called the guitarist a great guy and an amazing guitar player. Our best mate, Jimmy Barnes, called them one of the greatest bands ever and one of my favorite live bands in the world. Chris Cheney has reported that he's listened to, or his whole band listened to a whole lot of 10987654321 and Red Sails in the Sunset. And were blown away by their fearlessness in not being shackled to a style, which I thought was pretty sick. They've also inspired poet Daniel Nesta and paintings by Nicholas Harding. And covers of their songs have been done by Pearl Jam and Eddie Vedder when he was solo, U2, Patti Smith, The Killers, which you might remember from the 2017 Grand Final.
Yeah, that was great.
Which was fucking great.
That was the highlight
years.
Of the...
That,
yeah,
and then Mr. Brightside with Jack Rewalt singing along. That was pretty good.
That was, they kind of won me over, the Killers, that time. They're one of these sort of bands. They're kind of like one of today's Huey Lewis's, where they're sort of an easy target, I think, for cool people.
Yep. I see that.
They sort of shit on them a bit. But
Mr. Brightside still
slaps. I reckon they got some great songs. And that version of Forgotten Years was sick.
At the grand, like, it just seemed so right. It just seemed right. But Brandon Flowers, the singer, said he wished he'd written Forgotten Years. The song touches my heart.
Oh, that's cool. And funnily enough, I've been watching a bunch of Huey Lewis clips lately. And that off this new album, I think it was the first single off it, has just got a bunch of cameos. It looks like it was recorded in lockdown. You know, it's a lot of people... shooting themselves around the place. And one of them is Brandon Flowers.
Really?
Yeah, from The Killers.
What a ledge. But also covered them has been Imagine Dragons, Silverchair, Tom Morello as the Night Watchman, Billy Bragg and Anti-Flag. And then they also had a 2001 tribute album called The Power and the Passion.
I reckon that was where Frenzel...
Oh, that makes sense.
Covered them.
And several mainstream rock acts from Australia and New Zealand did covers, which included Something for Kate, Regurgitator, Grinspoon, Jebediah, Augie March, and Shehad, which would be awesome. And then in 2009, a version of Beds Are Burning was recorded by numerous musicians in protest of global warming and climate change. And that included Duran Duran, Lily Allen, Bob Geldof, Fergie, and Mark Ronson, which I don't know if I ever saw, but that sounds interesting. So I will find a link to that and put it on our socials, Listen Now Pod on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter.
Yeah, people should follow us on all those. Sam's working hard this season, getting a bunch of stuff out.
Trying to get my shit together this time.
So... I went with the positive sell. You went for negative there, Sam.
We got to balance each other out, Matt.
Yeah. I'm a real glass half full type.
And I'm a real glasses broken on the floor type. I'm just joking. I'm not really that sad. It's cool. We're all cool.
But yeah, no, I think you've been doing great stuff on there. So I think, yeah, if you want to follow along. And, yeah, Sam's putting a bunch of stuff up that's been being referenced in the episodes, which is fun.
Yay.
Yes. So I guess – well, that was cool. I didn't know – I didn't realize how wide their influence was.
Yeah.
There's another clip I'd love you to put out if you have a chance. Is one of their – any of the songs from their live on Goat Island.
Was that only –
was put on by Double J.
Was that only recently, or was that one that
was in the 80s, I think.
Oh, it was in the 80s. I think it was in the late 80s. Was there one recently?
I don't know if they've played. Oh, have they? Have they been playing? They might have started playing live together just before.
Just making some shit up as we go.
They have done some dates, I think. But
we'll find out.
Yeah, but yeah, they, no, this one was.
What was it? Live Goat Island?
Yeah, so it was in on this little island in the Sydney Harbour. So Sydney Harbour Bridge behind it. And they play at twilight. So the set starts in sunlight, ends in the night.
That's awesome.
It's an amazing. Yeah, it's been played on ABC a few times.
Yeah.
I'm sure it's got to be up online somewhere.
I'll find it.
But, yeah, definitely I would recommend that.
Sleuthing.
So good. And you just Rob Hurst is just a beast on the drums.
Is he?
Yeah.
What's the song that's got the really long drum solo in the middle?
It's and Power and the Passion, I think, with all the different drum sound effects.
Yeah, and it sounds like he's doing, like, pots and pans and bloody everything, and it sounds excellent.
Should I find it quickly?
Yes.
Will you talk for a second while I find it?
Well, yes, as I said, follow us on all of the socials. Listen Now Pod on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And if you want to write into us for letters to Alan or Alan's mailbag, whatever we've called it these days, our email is listennowpod@gmail.com.
All right, I'm going to have to skip around to find it. It's going to be about two-thirds through, I reckon. I nailed it. There we go. Let's go. Oh, Jesus. It's longish.
It's long.
Just picture him walking around the room, kitchen sink.
Yeah, this sounds
pulls
good.
Pulls out a machine gun.
That bit especially.
There's firecrackers going off the floor.
Does the film clip actually show him playing?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think I remember it like
I'll
an outside
courtyard. I'll see if I can find it and post it. Power and Passion drum solo. Also, something important I feel like we haven't mentioned is Peter Garrett's dancing. Matt's doing a drum solo. Nailed it. Peter Garrett was very known for a specific dance style, which Matt is attempting
became
like, to...
It became quite hacky
for
people to parody.
I feel like Kath and Kim kind of based some of their dancing off that.
Oh, it's great.
Great show, by the way.
It's great stuff. He just
I'll
goes
find
all
a clip.
In. I love that all in...
It's a full body motion.
Sort of shoulders are doing a lot of the work, pivoting at the shoulders.
Bottom half of the body is not doing
letting the arms flail.
It's a real flail.
It's great. It's sick.
I feel like if he had really long hair, it would be even more exaggerated. But in some ways, having no hair is equally exaggerated.
Yes. He's great dancer, just great live band.
Yes.
Hot tip. They're so good. Well, that brings us into the rating time.
Yes.
Which I kind of regret even starting this rating thing. Because when we were doing it for Cold Chisel, it was hard, but at least you were just comparing the band to themselves.
Yes.
This feels way stupider.
Yes. Well,
I
correct.
Mean, which in itself, that word describes itself, stupider.
Yep.
It's sillier, more silly.
Yep.
Anyway, so... I'm going to say I think this is my favorite album that we've done so far.
I agree.
Although I've loved them all. And they're all so different.
Yes.
It's funny, before we did this in my head, I sort of had this 80s as one thing idea. You know, that 80s sound. 80s, the big 80s pop rock sound. It's all the same.
Yep.
And these three albums are so different from each other. But I'm going to say, I'm going to give this a 72.
Ooh-hoo-hoo. I'm going to put it in a 70. I'm going to give it a 70.
All
losing
right.
points purely for the two slow songs that I am just permanently biased against.
Yeah, they do take a little bit more effort to go into. Arctic World took me a while. Is that what it's called, Arctic World?
I think so.
Yeah, Arctic World. It took me like I say, I listened to the album 20 times.
Yep.
I reckon it was on the 18th where I was really starting to click into my mind.
Nice.
Anyone written into the letters to Alan Bag?
Yes, there have
what
been
do we call this thing again?
I can't remember.
It's the
Letters to
letters
Alan?
Bag to
letters
Alan.
To Alan?
Just the song name. Just the Chisel
that,
song
that
name.
That was Letters to Alan, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I can't remember this.
I think we were calling it Letters Bag to Alan or something. Yeah. But yeah, Letters to Alan. We should simplify.
Letters with Alan. And it, yeah. So we got one from Nicholas Fuster. G'day, loving the second season of the pod, eagerly awaiting every episode. Thank you very much, Nicholas. Nonetheless, your suggestion of having a season of only boy bands is unfortunately flawed. Human Nature have only released 13 studio albums, and every other boy band pales in comparison, ensuring a rather short season.
Human Nature fan.
Yeah.
Love that.
Imagine following up Vegas, songs from Sin City, with something like Backstreet's Back. That would be jarring, to say the least.
All right, you've convinced me we won't do a boy band season.
Maybe one episode.
Well, no, I think he's made a good point there.
All right, fine. Cheers, we'll Nick. Do a Human Nature season. Could you imagine? Now, Nick was one of the people who requested that we don't spoil the album during the episode. So as we said earlier, listen for the very, very end if you want to know what next week's episode will be about, and we'll find out then. Otherwise, turn it off after we say goodbye. And what else did he say? He said, if you were ever looking to go back for a single band season, Silverchair would be a great option. Five of the most interesting albums I've listened to, with clear and distinct differences from each new edition. Love the show. Thanks for your efforts.
That could definitely be cool.
And, that would be cool.
I love the idea of a five-album series.
Yeah, nice and short. Do it on a solid day.
Let's do one
with
about
a couple of beers.
Jeff Buckley.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
What, yeah.
Savage Garden.
Joy Division.
Two albums. And we also
you're pushing us towards it. We're pushing in different directions, I feel.
Yes, but also
Midnight Oil. Let's meet. We're in our.
How many albums have they had?
They've had a few there, but not. Maybe what have they had? Seven or eight?
No, it's more than that.
Oh no, it is definitely more than that. Obviously, because this was their sixth album.
Yep.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. Sorry, 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4,
nice.
3, 2, 1 is one of their albums. No, so yeah, they've got. What did I say? 11.
Well, that's not so.
Midnight
Oil. It's not Cold Chisel.
Head injuries. Plays Without a Postcard. 10, 9, 8, 7, 6.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Red Sails. Diesel and Dust. Blue Sky Mining. Earth and Sun and Moon. Breathe. Redneck Wonderland. Capricornia. So that's
nice.
Their 11.
Yeah, okay. Oh, okay. And we got another letter from Finn McElvana. And I'm sorry if I just fucked that up. Sup hunks. Girls can be hunks too. Thanks, mate.
Thank you so much.
That's what he said. He said girls can be hunks. That's not me adding my own shit in. Anyway, great pod, of course, all that jazz. I always enjoy Matt's blind positivity towards songs that other, i.e. pesky journalists, will rag on, especially when the songs aren't that great. Like what you like.
I'm a fan of positivity.
Love that. Sam should never worry about singing along to songs when they're playing on the pod. If people want to listen to songs without Sam singing along, they can do that some other time. Thank you. It's lovely to hear people enjoying themselves to distract from the fact that nobody ever enjoys anything anymore, ever.
Hey.
Except for me enjoying this pod.
And me enjoying every song.
Yay.
Which isn't strictly true, but
it's, I mean, it's,
I think
it's
you've
mostly
got it once
it's
you,
like 98 points.
Once you figure out my language, I sort of damn things by faint praise.
Yep.
You know, I like this means that it's probably not one I like that much, but I love this. That means I like it.
Yeah.
I fucking love this. I really like it.
And that's an absolute
this is the best song
thumber.
Of all time. This is a really good song.
I'm confused.
I will kill for this song. Now we're getting into greatest of all time.
That pretty much means that you would actually.
I've
kill
just made
for
up
song.
That system now.
It's pretty accurate.
Is that
I'd
about
say.
Right?
He finishes. Glad you two committed to an entire second season. Can't wait for the rest of the episodes. Thumper of cum, Finn.
What a cum thumper.
On ya, Finn. So that's the mailbag has been closed for today.
Awesome. So yeah, if people want to send in emails, they can do it at listennowpod@gmail.com. And, you know, your odds of getting read out are very good.
Now, Matt, where can people find you apart from at all of the socials that I've listed multiple times? Listen Now everywhere.
Oh, my personal ones are Matt Stewart Comedy on Instagram and Facebook, and Matt Stew_art on Twitter. And yeah, my website's mattstewartcomedy.com.
Do you have a website? I feel like we've had this conversation before. I'm having
you're like, wow, you've got a website.
Yeah, you've made it, man. That's legit.
People can have websites.
This
will have it, but we're revamping the Do Go On podcast website, and so there'll be a listen now page on there.
Cute, love that.
Happens. So
we'll also, Do Go On is one of Matt's other podcasts that I don't think we've spruiked a whole lot this season.
Yeah, well, people should listen to it, especially if we've done a bunch of music bios.
There's been some crossovers, in terms of topics.
And Sam did an episode about Jimmy Barnes,
my best mate,
lead singer from Cold Chisel. But also, if you're interested in hearing the story of Lassiter's Gold,
and
what a farce that was from memory. There's an episode on that. A lot of adventures, other Aussie stories like Burke and Wills talked about the birth of Aussie rules football.
Nice.
In an early episode, so yeah.
And also, there's St Kilda episode.
There's not a not yet.
It's basically
I'm building to that. So there's heaps of
waiting for another flag first.
Lots of different sort of episodes. I did one about Bigfoot, and they're just sort of pretty well researched. Much like Sam's little bios, only spread out over an hour and a half.
Significantly more in depth research.
Yeah,
facts have been checked.
Yeah, we try to check the facts and use multiple sources and all that sort of stuff. And I do that with my friends Jess and Dave, and it is a lot of fun if you are interested in that sort of stuff.
Where can they find you for that, by the way?
So that's just Do Go On Pod on all social medias. And if you just search Do Go On Podcast in your podcast catcher, you should find it there. This most recent episode, I did a report on diamonds and how they're a bit of a scam, sort of.
Oh.
Which I knew nothing of. It was very fascinating. It's kind of about this company, De Beers, who found huge diamond mines in South Africa and ended up just creating the modern idea of the engagement ring and that sort of stuff.
What the fuck?
Created pure marketing. It's pretty amazing.
I listened to that on my drive home today.
Yeah, it blew my mind.
Yeah.
So that's something you can try out. But, yeah, there's all sorts of topics. Anyway, enough about Do Go On. This is the Listen Now podcast. So we'll tell you what I'll tell Sam what we're doing next
week
after the music. So listen all the way to the end if you want to. It's a bit of a Marvel Universe type thing.
It's always
Samuel L. Jackson will come in and he'll let us know what next week's album is.
Excellent.
But, yeah, is there anything else we need to say beyond that?
I think there's only one thing to say after that.
What's your Instagram?
Mine's club.mow, M-A-O-W, and it's just pretty much pictures of my fat ass cat.
And, yeah, links to most of that stuff will be in the show description if you don't have a pen and paper handy. Anyway, that doesn't leave us with anything else to say, but goodbye, Astrid.
Goodbye.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbroadcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates.
I mean, if you want. It's up to you.
So, Sam, I'm Iron Man. I'm just dropping into this cafe to let you know that your mission next week, if you choose to accept it, is to talk about the Van Halen album from 1984.
Is it also named 1984?
No, it's called Greatest Hits Part 1. No, it is 1984.
Yes, excellent. Oh, some of my favorite songs are on that album.
Oh, great. So you know it pretty well. It's not too far different from this Midnight Oil album. I knew three tracks very well.
Nice.
Off it. Three of their big hits are on it and nothing else of it. So looking forward to getting into that next week.
All right.
So we'll see you then.
Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.